ABC Radio Australia.
Fijian lawyer Imrana Jalal has become the first Pacific woman to be awarded the Ruth Bader Ginsburg Medal of Honour. The award recognises inspiring women jurists who fight to defend and strengthen the rule of law. It's a new medal. It was only established in 2021, 1 year after the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who served on the US Supreme Court and was famous for advancing gender equality. To hear more about this award, joining us now is Imrana Jalal. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Hi. Hello.
Hi. And I've got to say, congratulations first up for this award, the first Pacific woman to receive the award. How do you feel when you found out you'd won?
Stunned, really. To be honest, even though I've been a great admirer of Justice Ginsburg and have followed her career for many decades, I actually didn't know about this award. So when I was contacted and told, I was absolutely stunned and of course, just deeply honored and emotional and thinking, wow, this woman is somebody that, you know, lawyers like myself, who deal in human rights law all over the world, women lawyers in particular, of course, look to her. And, you know, even though she's an American and was on SCOTUS on the Supreme Court, really, her impact has been felt far and wide, especially when you live in the developing world where you're constantly trying to argue issues to promote gender equity, gender equality. The stuff that she's done in her life has been really inspiring and helpful that way.
Yes. Well, I'm not surprised you haven't heard of the award. It is new, I understand. But yeah, as you said, we've all heard of Justice Ginsburg and her unfortunate death a couple of years ago did make international headlines. I mean, you mentioned there her being famous for gender equality. What impact has she had on your life, on your career?
I guess the main impact is that no matter how difficult it is, you have to keep trying. I mean, it took her years, first of all, to get a job in a decent law firm, and then she ended up teaching at law school. Fighting court cases that created new precedents. The case involving her representing actually a male carer who looked after his aging mother, and to get him entitlements under US law that had never been given before, was created an enormous precedent, because that precedent was subsequently used by lawyers to fight for women's advancement in court. It's a kind of one of those ironic things. And then, of course, she argued many groundbreaking cases to promote women's rights within US law. And many of the ideas and principles that she argued and advocated have been used elsewhere in the world. So, even though it's a very specific American law, it also provided some really good common law examples, which we could use elsewhere to argue in other courts of law in the common law world. So her impact has been considerable. But I think one of the main things about her is that every time she lost either a policy argument or a court case, she continued to fight. So, you know, gender equality is not for the faint-hearted, especially in the developing world. It's very difficult. So her life is about not allowing people to get you down, to try to fight the good fight regardless, I suppose.
And now you've received this award in her name. Let's look at you and your career, Imrana. What inspired you to become a lawyer?
Realizing that, I'm very passionate about women's rights, and have always been, right from a young child. I grew up in a Muslim family where, you know, your community had very rigid roles constrained by, you know, social norms and so on, and not accepting that. And the law seemed to be a good arena to kind of wage that struggle. It seemed to be the sort of one of the best things you could do to change our situation of course, struggles are needed in every arena, but for me, it was about what can we do in Fiji and the Pacific to promote women's rights through the law. So for me, it's always been a passion. I mean, I was thinking the other day, somebody asked me a question and I said, right from when I was 6 years old, I realized that girls are treated differently and it has an impact on you. Like you can do, you know, you're not allowed to do this, but your male cousin can do this. So very quickly, even at primary school, you learn about gender roles and you realize that it's because you're a girl that you can't do these things. Having said that, I grew up in a family where my father was absolutely adamant that all his four daughters would be educated and that we would have the full benefit of an education. He would say things like, you know, I'm a Muslim, it's my duty to educate my daughters. Even though it's widely believed that Islam is about not educating girls. So, you know, and his argument, and we'd say, you know, father, you are a feminist eventually later in life. And he would say, I'm not a feminist. That's just my duty as a Muslim. He never wanted us to be dependent on a man. And he would say, if you are a widow, you will be able to look after yourself and your children. So, yeah, so...
And has that sort of that foundation, I guess, set by your father and others in your life as a child, how did that influence your work as a lawyer? I know you served as Human Rights Commissioner in Fiji. Is that right? Did you have the chance to look at any cases when it comes to gender equality there in Fiji?
I did, and I spent a lot of my life changing policy and legislation. One of the most terrible things that had happened in Fiji is that we had this antiquated family laws, and which we inherited from the British system, which was, you know, fully replete with discriminatory legislation and common law. And so I spent a good part of my life, 12 years, changing that law, 12 years, you know, with other women's rights group. And I was the commissioner that led the reform in family law, which gave unprecedented rights to women to, you know, seek custody of their children, to claim a share of matrimonial property, to get child support and so on. So certainly, a lot of my career has been about what I can do to promote women's rights in the law, but also beyond it. And I spent a lot of time working in various organizations as a gender specialist and as a human rights lawyer. So I've had the opportunity, and various governments in Fiji have responded to that. And I remember trying to change the family law went through three successive parliaments, because during those 12 years, there were two coups. Mm. And so that is why I'm so committed to the rule of law. You can't promote women's rights. You can't promote gender equality unless there is a solid system of the rule of law, because having democratic legislation is so intricately connected with having a functioning democracy, right? So for me, the various interruptions to the rule of law in Fiji since 87 has been a direct assault on the rule of law, because also it has not allowed us to progress as women.
Yes. I mean, Imrana, it's like you read my mind, because I did want to ask you about that. We just had last month this historic election that did see, well, a former coup leader, Frank Bainimarama, be replaced by another former coup leader, Sitiveni Rambuka. Now, under Bainimarama's prime ministership, there was a lot of criticism over the rule of law in Fiji. There were some concerns that it was being eroded by politics. What are your thoughts on that? And as an internationally renowned lawyer, did you have any concerns that you saw under the previous government? And do you continue having those concerns under this government?
So it's a very, very good question. So I've actually been away from Fiji for the bulk of those 16 years, and I left because of sham prosecutions against me and my husband. So, and that was done under the old regime. And so I left because of that, because the persecution of me was relentless. And you know, as a person who was fighting for democracy and the rule of law, we were targeted. Various individuals were targeted.
How were you targeted, Imrana?
through being prosecuted.
Yeah.
So in December, when the illegal government of Bainimarama took over, I was threatened with rape. Mm. So I left the country in December 2006 because of it. Then I came back eventually, and then I was prosecuted because of my stand against the regime. A couple of things. First of all, they'd illegally taken over government. And second, because they were rounding up people and harassing them in the camps and in the Queen Elizabeth barracks, were targeting people, having them dismissed from their jobs. It was very targeted against a handful of us initially. And then it became more widespread. So after trying to defend myself and almost losing our home, because it's very expensive to defend yourself. This is a very a weapon that a lot of illegal regimes use worldwide to cower their opposition. And I mean, I'm not involved in any political party. It wasn't party political. It was about defending those who were being targeted by the regime, but also defending myself. And if you're a human rights lawyer and you're defending yourself and you're constantly in court, you have no time or energy to defend anybody else, let alone defend the rule of law. So it's called lawfare. Lawfare is a very specific strategy to take down the opposition. It was done to Richard Naidu recently to prevent him from standing in the election. So lawfare has been a very clever strategic way to get people, because it has the guise of legality, you see. It has the guise of legality. So even if the regime doesn't win, by having you defend yourself in four different courts, which is what I was doing eventually, magistrates court, high court, etc., and they used this thing of I was a silent partner in a fish and chip shop. Sounds so bizarre when you say it. And the fish and chip shop belonged to my husband, and I was a silent partner. And you had to display your license on the window. And we had not been given our license and were told we could operate in the interim. So they prosecuted us for that.
Oh gosh, how do you feel now? This change in government that I understand is under the former Bainimarama government. I do you hope to return to Fiji?
Well, I have been in Fiji over the last year, back and forth, but I didn't go back for 6 years, and my husband didn't go back for 9 years because we were concerned, of course, and I had a son there, it just seemed to be a good idea to disappear for a while, because you get exhausted, you see. You just have no energy left to fight. So I left, and it was the best thing I did, because as soon as I left, the prosecution slowly went away, including against my husband. And so I ended up working in Manila, and I've been away since 2010 now. But I have gone back, and I went back this year a lot. And of course, watching from a distance what's happening in Fiji has been fantastic. For the first time, people are saying what they want. I mean, it's intoxicating. Freedom to say what you want is intoxicating after 16 years of absolute repression. Because if you said something against the regime in the last 16 years, you were sure to be targeted. You either prosecuted, or you lost your job, or one of your family members lost your job, or all of a sudden you couldn't get a contract on something, or your business would be affected. I mean, it was extraordinary, just extraordinary, the sheer depth of the victimization. Now, this never happened under the Rambuka regime. He did what he did, and I disagreed with what he did in 87, and I was arrested for it in 87, but he never went for anybody personally. He was on his own indigenous rights thing. It wasn't about individuals. This regime has been so vindictive against individuals, and so many people have left the country because of the vindictiveness, you see.
And considering that, Imrana, because I didn't know about your personal history there in Fiji, I mean, considering that you were the human rights commissioner there, but you have had to leave, you have been targeted by this lawfare, as you say. But now you've got this international award, this Ruth Bader Ginsburg Medal of Honor. And I've seen in Fiji media them, you know, championing you as a Fijian lawyer. Do you have a bit of a conflicting feeling about that? Your time in doing law in Fiji was cut short, but now, all these years later, you're celebrated for your law.
I know, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? But that's just the way Fiji is. I mean, if I had gotten the Medal of Honor during the old regime, I doubt whether many of the media would have covered it. Mm. You see, one of the things the media did was practice self-censorship. And so the Fiji Sun was totally compromised because it was basically the Fiji government's media, and they never published anything critical. The Fiji Times itself was prosecuted, I don't know whether you were, for contempt of court. So they became very careful. Fiji Village has always skirted close to free media and kind of like been very careful about, you know, what it said. But it was, it of all the media, it was the closest to being free. I doubt whether I would have been celebrated in this way had it been under the old regime. But because we now have free speech after 16 years, it has allowed various media outlets to publish. Like, for example, the Fiji Broadcasting Commission was totally compromised and, you know, is under the control of the former Attorney General's brother. And so even they did an article on me, the Fiji government web page. I mean, this would have been unheard of. And many people have commented on Facebook saying, Imran, it's so funny to us to see you being celebrated by the Fiji government, because it's a new regime, of course. And we've got a good minister, the Honourable Linda Timbuya, and her co-minister is Shashi Kiran, both great women who really believe in gender equality genuinely. So, of course, they did a press statement on me, but it's quite unusual.
Yes, they came out to congratulate you. I mean, yes, I didn't know about this history and your interaction with the Fijian government, or at least the former one, Imrana. So it puts this award in a lot of context here, this Ruth Bader Ginsburg Medal of Honor. We're out of time, but I you know, we could speak, I think, for hours about your work in law. But I wanted to ask, I understand there's the May is when the actual, you know, medal will be handed over to you and the other awardees. What's next for you? Will you be heading to Spain in May, where that ceremony will be?
Yes, I will. I've got a broken ankle and I'm recovering from it, but I'm going to go there even if it's in a wheelchair. It'll be lovely. I'm actually moving to the Asian Development Bank to work there as a special project facilitator, which is a similar to the job I had at the World Bank for the last 5 years. So I'm kind of in transition, and I've just started at the ADB working virtually actually. And so I will be doing a job where I receive complaints against World Bank projects. And I'm really excited. I love the Asian Development Bank. I used to work there 8 years ago when I first left Fiji, before the World Bank. And it's a really exciting job being able to deal with people's complaints and to try to solve them. Mm. So it'll be a another segue in my career, and I hope to come back to Fiji in 3 or 4 years and work in some development projects there. One big concern for me is water supply in Fiji. You know, water supply is very poor, and so we have to do something about that, because there's a direct link with that and women's time poverty.